July 15th, 2014, I'll call this work session of the Springfield Planning Commission to order. We are going to begin today with an update from the Development Advisory Committee. Jim Donovan is here for introductions, and Renee Clough, who has been a member of the committee and chairs the committee, is here to present some information to us. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Planning Commission. I also want to, if you haven't had the pleasure yet of meeting Mr. Matthew Rutgers, who is also a supervisor in the engineering division of current development and is also assisting us with the debt. So, you'll see much more of Mr. Rutgers in the future as well. We're here tonight to provide an update. If you'll recall, the DAC is the Development Advisory Committee. I believe it was early 2013 that we were wrapping up the former developer input process and the work that was done there. And we were back here with you folks on Citizen Involvement Committee and reviewing priorities, and then we made a recommendation to council. We seated the committee and we began work on the top three priorities, and the committee has made some significant progress toward their work on ministerial site plan review. That was kind of the target when we went through site plan review efficiencies, all of the different site plan iterations that we have, and the focus has largely been on that issue. So we're going to just briefly run through a couple of things in your attachments. I'm going to leave time for the chair to speak as well, and anyone else. Mr. Rick Satry from the committee is here and has been a large resource to us, so we'll try to answer your questions. But to your packet this evening, we have the original DAC mission and priorities first, and you'll recall that I think council gave us a mission to try to make efficiency improvements that would help development approval process and the economic development process, and would make us a more attractive community for development. So you have the mission statement, and from the work prioritizing all of the different things that were on the table, you have the table in attachment one. In attachment two, you have some site plan information in the form of the flow chart and the documents. And what's probably a good refresher there, you see the 120-day process in one diagram. The other one is the sort of continuum of intensity and resources. And it starts at the beginning with a simple counter visit on top, where you come in and you may just simply have a question about changing uses, et cetera, et cetera. And you may be able to proceed with only building permit. Then we go through the LUX and the site plan review MDS standards. These are ministerial standards and form somewhat of a basis for the model that the committee has been pursuing. We're looking for another ministerial tool. The type 2 site plan review, which is listed next, is a discretionary tool. It exercises discretion on the part of staff, so we have to do public notice. And again, what we're looking for is something that takes that discretion out of a site plan review process and would allow something along the lines of a checklist, almost, where every reasonable person could see that a standard is met. So after that, you see master plans and refinement plans, and the continuum is complete, if you will. It gets pretty complicated at the other end. Then, the body of work that has been pursued rigorously with a lot of training, some legal input, and using the MDS major as a model. The things that are highlighted in yellow are the criteria from the MDS major. We have come up with 12 pages of ministerial standards from the code as cited through the MDS process. We have reached, if you will, kind of the crux of the issue, where you see highlighted in that document areas still under construction. We've come to primarily stormwater improvements, access and circulation improvements, and some legal issues with exactions where you're trying to do street improvements and other easements and continuation of utilities. These are, if you will, kind of the crux of the issue. It's a hard task to convert those to ministerial formulas, if you will, where we can move this forward and complete our work creating the implementation structure, the applications, and all of that. So we are, again, well down that line. We've come to the point where it's going to take some additional engineering work from Matthew's team, and we're kind of in the position where we have to go back to City Council and advise them that it will take more time and resources at a time where many other opportunities, such as the Glenwood priorities, other things, major projects in the city, major redevelopments of existing hospitals, other hotel and conference centers that may or may not come to bear. So we're a little concerned that we stay on the radar and that our work is recognized and is completed. So when we talk about resources in the last little matrix, the last attachment to your staff report this evening, that's what it's referring to, is our outstanding work in the zoning code and legal review, as I mentioned, the transportation, stormwater, sanitary, and some fire and life safety. And you can see that it requires 3 to 6 months on most of those items. So we do still, like I said, have some heavy lifting left to do. However, by this time, we are a seasoned committee. Everyone is really adept at identifying ministerial and discretionary standards, and I'm confident that some of the implementation actions, if we get to completion on the instrument, we'll be able to work out how that changes how we do reviews. Other resources beyond this completion would be how do you set up staff? How do you change the process internally with planning staff, engineering staff, building staff, all doing a concurrent review using ministerial standards? We'll defer on that one for the time being and focus on completing the work at hand. And I think that's where I'll probably stop with the background and my synopsis of where we're at. Again, I want to leave time for our chair and take your questions as needed.
So as Jim kind of covered, to date we've been working on kind of conceptualizing, confirming that it's possible to have ministerial site plan review. We've come to the conclusion it is possible that we have a good concept and are now kind of at that breaking point between conceptual and actually doing it, making it. And so that seemed a logical breaking point to, you know, come back to Planning Commission and City Council and say, here's where we are, here's where we're going. We have been doing something, we promise. So probably I'm guessing that probably most of you are up to speed and aware of why, or the benefit to a ministerial option. There's a lot of local people that just want to get things done quickly. A ministerial option allows them that because they don't have to wait for some of the public notice and process and things that go along with discretionary. But in addition, there's a lot of companies and businesses from out of the area looking to, you know, put in a new student housing project or put in a new call center or something that, in comparing Springfield to other jurisdictions, whether it's Eugene or Albany or Burns, they're looking for where can we do it the fastest and cheapest typically. And discretionary usually scares them in that they look at it, well, we're not sure what's going to come out of this. We want something that even if we have to give up, you know, a little bit, we know what's going to come out of it. And that is a ministerial process. Exactly, like Jim kind of touched on, exactly how the ministerial process is going to fit in and pair up with other existing options. We're still trying to kind of fine tune that a little bit. If it's something that you come in to you know, submit for a site plan review, and then staff says, oh, look, you can go the ministerial route or this route, or if it's something that you apply for completely separately, we're working on that nuance, but I think that's more of a detail than a big picture item. There are certainly other details still to work out. Like Jim touched on, there's some transportation items that are still needing to be worked out, how they can be converted to discretionary, some stormwater. I think Matthew, when he put together the, towards the back, attachment 4, page 1 of 1, did a pretty good job of outlining what was left on the technical items there. One thing that I'm not sure if it's, you do say at the bottom that they can be done concurrently, but one thing that the committee was looking at is possibly a way to speed up that, even with the concurrency item, would be possibly bringing in some outside resources, some outside consultants to help with some of those analysis items. That's something that will need to be looked at a little bit closer by staff and city council to see if that's a direction to go or not. But it may help speed things up a little bit. And, then, which kind of leads into the staff time. I know staff has been feeling a little bit of a crunch. It's a conversation we're having with city council of, can you help us understand where we fit into the picture, how much staff time's available to us, how's that going to impact our work? And I think the last bullet point that I have here that I was going to go over with you is we have had a couple committee members for various reasons either step down or temporarily not be currently active on the group. So we are needing to look at replacing two, possibly three members. And there again, we'll need a little bit of direction from City Council on exactly when and how they want that to happen.
I would just mention that on Monday, July 7th, we did have testimony from two DAC committee members, and basically stating to the council, the council is going through a process right now with Glenwood and other things that are going on, talking about resources to support the activities that are going on. So the DAC committee members did get in front of the city council on July 7th and basically remind them of their charge and let them know that they would be, to move this forward, there would be some additional staff requirements to get us to this final ministerial stage, be it contracted or in-house, which I think is good. I think the council needed that update. So, you know, this group has worked long, hard, arduous. This is a tough task. And I think we're going to be much better for it. You know, but we're now at the stage we have to pull in some resources to.
Are you happy with your progress?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly, you know, there's always an aspect that, gee, would have been nice if it could go faster. But the reality is we wanted to make sure it was well thought through, that it was planned out well, that it wasn't just haphazard and then all sorts of problems come out of that. So, you know, we there was a couple times we started down a path and then decided, you know, this isn't going to work out. And so we'd go back and go down a different path. I think it's well thought out, thorough.
Sounds like a good process. I'm impressed. Yeah.
And I think Jim pointed also to this other piece, you know, of once this is in place, if and when it is going to change the staff's interplay and the process for moving projects through the permitting process. And that is going to, you know, it's going to streamline that process for staff as well. So this isn't just about being good for the business community. This is a good thing for the city. And part of one of our goals was around advocacy and helping these things move through the process. So it's this whole shift of kind of a culture change, a checklist, ministerial approach to get some of these projects tracked and moving. So, yes, Johnny?
How did the council receive that? What was your perception of how they received the testimony by the two?
I thought it was very well taken. I think our two representatives did an excellent job, and I think it was very well presented and well taken. City Councilor Van Gorden has been on this committee with myself since day one. So he also is communicating with City Council about this process. So,
what about the cost? Have you guys talked at all about what the fee would be for the ministerial site plan review?
There has been some looking at that. We've hesitated to come up with an exact amount until we see what this process is going to be, how it fits in.
Just because you're looking at multiple reviews, and you know, like you said, some developers might get a little bit scared about, you know, coming in and trying to get it done as quick as possible. So cost is definitely, I'm sure, a factor of how that's going to be handled too.
The beauty of that is the sort of concurrency and ministerial standards should be, like I said, a reasonable person should be able to look at these standards and look at a plan and decide that is met or that is not met.
Yeah.
If it's not met, you might get an off-ramp back into the standard site plan review process. Yeah. If it is met, you proceed down that line. And that's something that could be done when we say concurrent reviews or multiple reviews, that's how a building permit is typically handled. So we're looking at something that is less intensive, shorter, and hopefully is efficient for everyone involved.
Well, I hate to stop here. Very important information that you've shared. We've got another item on the agenda that is paramount that we get through prior to our public hearing.
Just one moment. Does the engineer have anything to comment on?
What's that?
Do you have anything to comment on it?
No, I mean, Renee's engineer.
I just want to hear that.
Very good job of kind of outlining where we're
Tim, quickly.
My question is, you've got a number of site notes here, deletions. Mm-hmm. Are those deletions from your evolving proposal? Are they deletions from current policy?
They are deletions from the notes and our work and consideration and reconsideration. This is about as clean as it gets. After about 18 months, it becomes almost unreadable when you see the full document. So this is somewhat of a sanitized document, and it's still somewhat.
Because I was concerned about the 1C, about eliminating consideration in installing sewer systems to take into account advanced.
We're at the crux of the issues, it is, if you have to extend a utility or something like that, that is typically involves how much you extend, what size is it, and what do you have to serve, and anything, be it sanitary, stormwater, or traffic, there are basins. So we have policies that require us to serve the site and surrounding properties. It's one of the challenges if you're trying to do something so zeroed in on one property and do it ministerially. That's why some of this takes quite a bit of time. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we can, if the commission would like further information or to get in more depth on this, we can certainly do that at a subsequent work session. But
yeah. Right. I mean, I assume it's okay if they contact me directly too, which
sure.
is always fine.
Thank
One
you.
Last parting shot, because I know we have a full dance card. Just that, you know, we're here, we're at your service, we'll be back to see you with more draft language. It'll go through the full process of adoption, and we'll probably come visit you on the reseating members to the committee and
yeah.
check with you, because you are the
CC.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry I asked that question, Greg, but I sort of wanted
to. Oh, that's good.
No, good.
Okay, our second item on the agenda tonight is the appeal of director's decision for Laurelwood Subdivision. Mark Metzger is going to be presenting.
I wanted to take this opportunity in a work session to just give you background and context, and I will not be arguing the city case in work session. That is something that's for a public hearing. But there are a lot of issues, a lot of things, you know, in the appellant's plain, my guess, and I just wanted to make sure that going into the appeal, there was clear understanding about some of the terminology and some of the things. So this is intended to be context and background. And the context will focus mostly on geographic, topographical kinds of issues, and then the process is just that, process issues. Context, we'll look at a vicinity map, topography, conceptual local street map, and the tentative plan. Process, we'll look at sort of the steps in the public notice process, and then we'll look at the steps in the public subdivision review process. This is the subject property owned by Hayden Homes. This is Mount Vernon Road down here. This you can't see very well, but there's a stubbed off piece of Ivy Street that comes right here, which is the proposed connection point for the subdivision. The subdivision will be built primarily right here within this block of trees. There will be a connecting road that comes across a 225-foot BPA power easement that comes through here. So the road will come across like this. This small lot here is an existing home owned by Barbara Parmenter. And she was the former owner of this entire area here. Ms. Parmenter disputes the ownership of this, but all this to say that she has a stake in this. But the road will come around, and then the homes will be built primarily down here. These lines here are 2-foot contours. I chose this level just to show you that there is some slope up glacier, and in particular, there's a steep drop off just in front of Ms. Parmenter's home, and that the homes are being built back up here where it's relatively flat, but there is this precipitous drop off that goes down to a wetland at the base of the slope, and then Weyerhaeuser Road. So there's a lot of change in terrain and so on, and Glacier Street, we'll just keep moving on, we'll talk about it later. This is a conceptual street map. This is something mentioned in the appellant's application. The conceptual local street map is something that was developed back in the 1990s, and it was intended to look long-term across the city and where do we need to make transportation connections. These lines here represent street connections that the consultant recommended back then, showing where connections should be made, where should roads be located in general to service land that's undeveloped. This process and so on did not necessarily have the advantage of detailed engineering about the specific alignments. So when we talk about the conceptual local street map showing Glacier being the intended connection for development out here where Laura Wood is proposed, or that was without the benefit of analysis, engineering analysis, geotech analysis. Forgive the sideways, but I wanted you to have the same north-south orientation that you had with the prior maps. But on the left-hand side, you have the subdivision plan. It's a two-phase plan. This line here demarks the city limits. This here to the west is outside the city limits. Hayden Homes has applied for annexation for this part of the property. Phase one is inside the city limits. So it's the first 25 homes or so in this area here that are part of this particular subdivision phase. It's what's being considered. Here is Ivy Street. This is that connection I told you. And again, the trees and so on are just right in here, right up against the BPA power easement. Here's Weyerhaeuser Road. Here's Glacier Drive, if you can remember the topography here. Extending Glacier Drive would have put that right along a very steep slope. This here shows a large planted area, Doug fir. This is almost a monoculture through here. These here are deciduous trees, but for the sake of development, these trees, for the most part, will be removed. That said, there's a large block of trees on this property here, this tract here, and so on, that will not be touched. That helps preserve the stability of the slope. These particular trees and so on contribute to the habitat for the wetland that is at the base. This area up here, again, I'm sure it has some kind of habitat value, but as part of our tree felling ordinance, if the land is constrained and you have the need for development to remove trees to accommodate that development, then that is a justified rationale for tree removal. Process. When an application comes in across the counter, there's a certain intake process where staff people at the counter quickly review materials being submitted. Those are taken in, and one of our administrative assistants then uses a tool called MapSpring. It is a GIS tool. Commissioner Saladay would be understanding of what GIS is and so on. But in essence, that tool will pick the subject site and then create a 300-foot bubble, basically, around it and extract all of the property owner addresses and then just site addresses in case there are renters. And it creates mailing labels. So those mailing labels are created. Staff reviews a stock form notice letter for the application, and the letter is sent out. As I mentioned, the mailing goes to both residents and property owners. There is an affidavit of service where Karen will basically staple the mailing labels, a copy of the mailing labels to her affidavit. It's notarized by another staff person saying that on this date, these letters, notices were sent to all of these addresses. The appellant will be talking about a pink bubble, and this is the MapSpring shaded area shown by that 300-foot buffer. And so when she's talking about a pink bubble, this is what she's talking about. There was a corrected notice sent out, and in correcting the notice, staff hand-selected tax lots, and there was no pink bubble created by that because we just hand-selected lots. On the subdivision process, first of all, subdivision plan, tentative plan review is a type 2 process, which means it's publicly noticed, but it's reviewed in-house by staff. Staff makes a decision, but there's an opportunity for appeal. But in that process, generally in the case of Hayden Homes, we had a development issues meeting, which occurred months before the application was received. We talked about different issues and so on that would go into the plan. A pre-submittal meeting was held where they bring what they think is their best draft of a subdivision plan, and staff goes over and says, well, you need to add more detail of this, change this and that. And then they resubmit it as a final application. Once we have the final application, development review committee goes through and basically grades that paper. Staff collects input from different agencies, different staff members, and so on. And that's what that staff report that I create is. It's a compilation of comments and so on from many different disciplines and so on in response to the criteria that we use for approving subdivisions. Staff then issues a decision. With that decision is a notice that you can appeal within a certain number of days after the decision is mailed out. That decision is mailed out to everyone who submits some kind of comment through that mailing effort that we made upon receiving the application. After the tentative plan is approved in concept, the technical people in transportation and civil engineering begin work on what's called a public improvement plan. So there are many, many details that get down to the construction level detail that are not considered by this subdivision tentative process, that are considered in this public improvement process. And at this point, there are minor tweaks that are made. There's been some minor tweaks made to the Laurelwood subdivision, but they're not substantive in terms of changing the overall layout of the subdivision. So that is much less than 30 minutes, but I guess I wanted to make sure, without arguing the case, if there's things that, concepts, terms, and things that you had a question when you read through this huge bulk of material.
Yes.
A couple of things. One is, one of the minor issues was the pathway.
Yeah.
And I was wondering just how vital does the city deem that pathway to be, given the fact that somebody had fenced it off? It doesn't really seem to have a destination in particular. So is that a real vital need to have that pathway reestablished?
You know, our transportation folks felt it is. It's not that it is valuable the way it is right now. It's been largely unused, I think, for 30 years, since the 1980s. But I've invited Mike Liebler and Clayton McEachern to join us this evening. They will be in the hearing, but I don't know if either one of you would like to speak to that.
Commissioners, I'm Michael Liebler. I'm the transportation planning engineer for the city of Springfield. The current path right now was a pre-existing path, and as part of site plan review, we went out on the site and checked it out. It's in pretty good condition, and as you can see, at the south end of 55th Place, there were already planned connections from the cul-de-sacs, which connect into the existing path. There are other pathways to the north through the easement. I think down at the bottom of the slope, around in between Main Street and the slope, there's a basketball court. There's a path that extends up through there. I know there are grade issues coming up, but it is a corridor that in the future could be extended farther south into the Jasper Natron area. Not much you can do really with a BPA easement with a lot of the stuff in there, so often having a path is something that you can use within that. The value of it in existence, it's an amenity for the neighbors, a natural area for them to go around in, and it's a pedestrian and bike connection for alternatives throughout the neighborhood, obvious the street, but it was never anything that was a huge, huge priority, of something that was pre-existing, that was in good condition, that we could, you know, connect to be a larger amenity.
I think right now it's more of an opportunity for the future. I suspect with the lack of shade trees on the path and the overhead wires and so on, that people might walk their dog out there for other purposes, but it's not a park-like setting right now. That said, City of Eugene years ago took very similar kind of BPA alignment and turn that into hiking trails in southeast Eugene. And
if I can add real quick, the Booth Kelly Road is currently just a dirt road that runs down to the city and Willamette Lane on pieces of at the
it's
bottom
off the
of
map.
The,
it's off the map. It's off the map.
It's off the map. Oh, it's up here. Long term, the city's planning on turning that into a major pedestrian bike corridor through the city. We're not sure how we're going to do it, but we'd really like to connect both sides of the path to of the path into BPA to that. So long term, we want to keep our options open.
Okay. Is
that nobody mentioned.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. One other issue that I want to ask about, if I may.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt, but I think it would probably be better to save it for the questions for the hearing and the next,
okay,
because a lot of this information is going to now need to be repeated in the hearing, so it might be better to
thanks
wait.
For keeping me in
yeah.
track.
This is really just high-level terms and to make sure we all understand the location and how things are laid out and the questions that are before us. So, okay. Other questions? Okay. Hearing none, we stand adjourned. We'll reconvene at 7 o'clock in regular session.
Okay.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, that's what I was like, sitting up on. Oh my God, that's why I have one right here. Wow.